Okay. We took something of a break last week for that special discussion, but now we'll get back to what we were up to. So what the Kuzari is doing here, I guess the two of us for now, what the Kuzari is doing here is presenting as part of his proof for the Torah the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu comes in the Torah and basically presents all of the background of how the world and civilization developed. And as we'll see now, that's something that would be very difficult to sell if it wasn't true. So let's see now. Omer HaKuzari, Kama Atem Moinim Hayom? How many, according to your records, according to the Torah's records, how old is the world today? This is where we left off last week, right? Omer HaKhover. So the Chover answers, Arba'a Salafim V'chameishmai. So at that time, it was at 4,500 years, meaning this debate took place about 1,200 years ago. Now if you want the exact calculation of the years of history, it's all spelled out in the Chumash. The Torah tells you exactly how we get to the amount that we're holding by today, because the Torah gives you the exact amount from the first day of creation through the days of Adam, Sheis, Enosh, through Noach, Ad Shem Ve'ever, through Shem Ve'ever, Ad Avram, Yitzchok, Ve'Yakov, Ad Moshe. This continues from Avram, Yitzchok, Yaakov, Moshe, meaning the chain of years is straight. The Torah provides you with an accounting of all the years from the creation of the world until Moshe, who actually gave over the Torah. So the Torah accounts when the Torah was actually given over to the Jewish people. Every year from the beginning of creation was accounted for in the Torah. Now, ve'ele hayuleva adam usgulasa. Now, it's interesting to note that the accounting of years from the Bereishis until the Torah was actually given over in the time of Moshe, how does the Torah present the years? The Torah doesn't just give historic events, this happened at this point and that happened at that point. We calculate the years by calculating the lives of different people, right? The whole calculation of the years is expressed through this person lived for this amount of years, his son lived for this amount of years, his son lived for this amount of years. By going and adding it all up, obviously not adding it up son to father because they overlapped, but when you put together how many years after this one was married was that one born, you get the cheshbon of the years. Why is it presented that way? Why is it presented through these people? Torah is coming to tell you how old the world is. Why is it presented by telling us, well, it was Adam who lived this long, and then Sheis who lived this long, and Noach who lived this long? And the answer is, the purpose of the Torah is to tell about these people. The purpose of the Torah is not to give an accounting of years. We happen to have an accounting of years since we have the Torah. But that's not the Torah's purpose. The Torah's purpose is to tell the story of these people, of the chain of mankind that the Torah takes us through. Why? The Elu Hayuleva Adam Uskulasa. Why? Because it's these people, that chain that the Torah presents to us, Adam, through Sheis, through Noach, Shem Ve'Eva, I'm skipping generations, but ultimately through Avram, Yitzchok, Yaakov, their children, Moshe, and the Jewish people, they are really the heart of humanity, the heart of mankind. And that's why the story of mankind is about those people. It's a very egocentric statement. Let's note what he's saying here. The story of mankind is the story of, begins with Adam, and then continues with the family of Avram, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. We have to realize that. The Torah is not the story of the Jewish people. What is the definition of the Torah? The Torah is the story of the universe, the story of the creation. What is the story of the creation? Avraham Avinu's family. Ele hayuleva adam v'skulasay. These people were the heart of humanity. Humanity is them. Ulekal echad mehem hayu banim. And they all had their children, and the story of humanity continued with their children. Vashar kiklipos. And all of the others are just like the peels. Meaning when you have a fruit. The peel, preserve the fruit. But the purpose is the fruit, not the peels. The peels is just the side stuff. All the rest of humanity is just the peels around the fruit, which is these people. If so, I understand we're talking more about something like a pomela than an apple. If you're talking bulk-wise, the apple has a tiny little peel and a lot of fruit. Here we're talking about a massive peel around a little heart of fruit in the middle. That's humanity. Even though the rest of humanity actually came from these people too, they came from Adam HaRishon, but they're not the same as Adam HaRishon. They're just the peels, the shells. They are not attached to Hashem. Meaning the whole definition of man is the person who carries the spirit of Hashem on him. The person to Hashem connects to. That's what a man is. All these others are not that. So even though they look the same as Jews, physically, it's a completely different species. We're going to see he already mentioned this concept earlier, and he's going to spend more time on it. But let's understand the magnitude of what he's saying here. That's not what the style of the Torah. How does the Torah work? From the beginning of the Torah, it seems that there's a certain imbalance in the Torah. What's the first pasuk in the Torah? First pasuk in the Torah is Bereishis Bara Elokim Es Hashamayim Ves Haaretz. Hashem created heaven and earth. That's already imbalanced, because are heaven and earth equal sides of the scale? Earth is a tiny little speck of existence in a massive universe, right? The heavens and earth seems imbalanced, but it's even stranger in the next pasuk. Next pasuk is Va'aretz Hayisaseu V'Vayu. All of a sudden, the whole focus zooms in on Earth. The universe is addressed, alluded to in the first pasuk. Then it recedes into the background. Now the Torah zooms in on Earth. Now the Torah continues this style. The Torah describes how Torah moves quickly. Right, the creation is Torah moves quickly through creation. Light was created. The structure of the earth, right? Topography of the earth was arranged on the second day, and the atmosphere was created on the second day, right? Atmosphere on the third day, and then you have the great lights created after that, and you have plant life and animal life, and the Torah moves through all that very quickly. Plant life is extremely complex. Plant life fills up volumes and volumes and volumes, shelves and shelves. And the Torah is just a couple of words. The Torah is moving really fast. All of a sudden, when it reaches the sixth day, right? Torah flew through the sun, the moon, the stars, the atmosphere, plant life, animal life. All of a sudden, the sixth day, the Torah slows down. It says, there's a whole preface. Let us create man. Man is the crown jewel of the relation, of the creation. That's why what you're seeing is, you're right, in volume, in quantity, the rest is much greater than man. But the Torah is really the story of the universe. The story of the universe is man. All the rest are just background. And that's why the Torah presents it that way. Yeah, there are heavens out there. There's a whole earth. But all that quickly moves into the background, quickly recedes into the background as the Torah zooms in on its story. Then man is created, and the same style continues. It's Adam HaRishon. We have some discussion about Adam HaRishon's family. And then quickly mankind starts multiplying. Okay, the Mabul comes along and wipes everybody out. Now we have Noach. Noach has three children, and they quickly begin multiplying too. Right? And the Torah tells us, multiply, nations started developing. And then a man named Avram was born, and all of a sudden again, that same phenomenon. The Torah zooms in on Avram Avinu. All the rest of mankind now, which up till now was the story of the Torah, now all the rest of mankind recedes into the background. And now, the story of the Torah is about Avraham Avinu, and Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Yaakov's children, and the Jewish people. So we have to realize, the Torah is not the history of the Jewish people. The Torah is the story of the universe. The story of the universe is mankind, because that's the purpose of the universe. The story of mankind is the family of Avraham. The entire universe, the entire earth, and all of mankind is just the background. It's just the setting of the story of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu epitomizes mankind. That's the story of mankind. Why? Because it was Avraham Avinu who carried the spirit of Hashem. That's what defines man. All the rest are the most intelligent of beasts, like they consider themselves. We're not against Goyim. We consider them actually, we respect them more than they respect themselves. Right? Yes, what is the human? Human is the most intelligent beast. No, we don't believe that. We believe that man is greater than beast. But it's a lower species than the Jewish people. They look the same, but it's a completely different being. It's only a very superficial similarity. Absolutely not. Okay, so the truth is, it's very interesting to note, that's right, this is not politically correct. We have to realize that we are an egocentric bunch. And it's one of the most fundamental principles of Torah. It's not that we want to believe this, we have a chiyuv to believe this. He keeps stressing that one of the three central themes of Torah is the choice of the Jewish people. The exclusive choice of the Jewish people. They are Hashem's people. Right? Now, how did Khuzri have the nerve to say this? So it's interesting. He's talking to the king, right? This is taking place in a discussion with the king. And the answer is, this king was a sincere seeker. Today, the truth is, wisdom is gauged by its political correctness. If something is nice, it can be. If something is not nice, it can't be. But there's no intellectuality at all. Right? It makes no sense from an intellectual standpoint that if something isn't nice, it can't be. If something is intolerant, if something isn't accepting of everything, it can't be. That doesn't make sense at all from an intellectual standpoint. Just that today, it's all about everything is good, everything goes. But this Melech Kuzar was an intellectual. And he's willing to hear. He wants to hear. Tell me what it is. Tell me it as it is. And therefore, the Chaver is not sugarcoating things. And he's saying things as they are. You wanted to know what our faith is and whether I can base our faith, whether I can substantiate. This is our faith and I'm substantiating it. What did we do with censorship, etc.? I don't know. I don't know how this made it through the generations of censorship. Apparently, the censors weren't as interested in texts like these as they were with the Talmud. I don't know. Other than that, I don't have an explanation. What's that? Possibly, right. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't know. But this is definitely not material that would go over favorably. Now, V'nimne haminyan le'ele ho'eloiki. And therefore, the count of the world is counted by the lives of these godly people. Because again, the Torah is not about how old the world is. It's not the subject of the Torah at all. The Torah has no need to tell us how old the world is. We infer it because the Torah tells us about the lives of these godly people. We know how long they lived. We can figure out how long the world is around for. But that's not the Torah's subject. It's incidental that we can derive it from the Torah. Why?
The 10 generations of Noah, that we know practically nothing about except for their names and their years, the only purpose is, what was the purpose? If there's no, what value is it just to know, okay, obviously around 2400 years?
Well, there are two answers. We can answer that question on two levels. On the pshat level and on the deeper level. The reason is because the Torah is telling, again, it's not the story of the Jewish people, but it's the story of the universe. The Torah is telling us from scratch. Hashem created the universe leading up to these events. And therefore the Torah tells the whole story leading up to these events. The Torah wants us to know not just that Avraham Avinu appeared on the scene, because that might imply, well, there's a world. That's a fact. And incidentally, Avraham Avinu appeared on the scene and started the true faith. No. The world was designed from the first place in order to lead up to Avraham Avinu. And the world also created the setting for Avraham Avinu. The truth is that the events before Avraham Avinu's time, such as the Dor HaPlaga, even the Mabul, were things that facilitated Avraham Avinu's campaign in life. Imagine Avraham Avinu suffered under Nimrod. Imagine if all the world was just under Nimrod's rule. Avraham Avinu only managed to spread his ideas because he left Nimrod's rule and went elsewhere. That was only possible if there was a Dorah Flaga. And if there hadn't been a Babel, how much adverse influence would there have been to his ideas if all the families of Cain were still around? Right? All the wickedness that he had to fight in his lifetime was a small percentage of the original humanity, a tiny percentage. So, it's all there just in order to tell us the story of the backdrop and the setting in which Avraham Avinu was born.
What I'm asking about the years, which you're seeing not to be stressing, but they are, they're still there. So what can we gain?
No, the years, which years is it though? It's the years, the main years that are stressed are the years of the ancestors who led up to Avraham Avinu. And those were part of the story of the world. So it was Adam Arishain, Hevel, sorry, not Hevel, Shace. Hevel is questionable. He might have been Shace's previous guild. But Shace, Shem and Aver, these people were also fulfilling the purpose of the world, not in as great a way as Avraham Avinu. But the story of the world at that point was about them. But the truth is that there's more to it also. There's two more levels of depth to this. First of all, the Torah makes a point, as we're going to see soon, he's going to be discussing now. The Torah makes a point, davka, of providing a lot of details. A lot of details, historic details, technical details, for the purpose of making itself credible and, how would you say, able to corroborate. Corroboratable. I don't know. But, corroboratable. That's part of the reason that the Torah provides all these details. A person who's trying to tell, if you're trying to sell a fib, keep it short. Don't give too many details, you're going to trip yourself up. The Torah is full of details, both as far as historic details, numbers, as we're going to see soon. The Kuzari is going to draw on this to prove the authenticity of the Torah. Numbers, dates, places, this happened at this time, that happened at that time, all kinds of things. All kinds of landmarks, the Torah says. This happened then, and you still see that there, and you still see that there. All kinds of things. If someone's making up a false story, that's not the way to do it. The New Testament, what?
You still see pages in that book that's written by man. And all this proof, the Khazari king saw it, but...
That's right. That's right. We'll say even more than that. Pari witnessed... These people say that the story of the ten Makkos and the splitting of the sea was made up. Pari witnessed the ten Makkos and the splitting of the sea, and he still managed to convince himself that, well, it doesn't really mean that. He was, not after the splitting of the sea, but after all the ten Makkos, he still was able to talk himself into chasing the Jewish people. How could he do that? Answer is, when a person doesn't want to accept, certainly proofs, and even open miracles will not convince him. A person has to approach it with something of an open mind, being willing to see. If you want to put this into other terms, I think it was Reb Mordechai Gifter. He said that there was once, he said it as follows. This is an important point. He said that there was once a person who went to visit he asked the question, how is it that scientists are atheists? How could that be? You think that the more a person delves into science, the more clear everything becomes. Right? They said there was once a person who went to visit, what's it called again, the museum in France, the famous art museum? Louvre, right, Louvre. Went to visit, and there they have some of the most famous paintings in the world, and this person walks to the first painting, everybody else is standing there impressed, he looks at it and he says, looks like yogurt to me. Yogurt. Walks to the next painting. Looks like yogurt. Third painting. Same comment again and again. Each beautiful painting that he sees looks like yogurt. The guy standing next to him was starting to get irritated. He turns to him, he looks at him, he says, "Mister, you know why all these paintings look like yogurt to you? Because you have yogurt smeared on your glasses." What? So, wipe your yogurt off your glasses and then you'll see the paintings. You won't just see yogurt. The point is, if a person already has what he wants to see, people approach the Torah knowing it's not true, now they just have to prove it, they'll manage to show it. It's like when the first the first ones to reach space were the Russians. The Americans were the first ones to land on the moon, but the Russians got to space before the Americans. The first Russian astronaut was a guy by the name of Yuri
Gagarin,
that's right, Yuri Gagarin. He was the first guy to get to outer space. When he came back, the top dog in Russia, I forgot what they call it, the premier, whatever they called him. That's right, was Khrushchev. And he said, Nikita, right? What was his name? Nikita Khrushchev. So he announced that this Gagarin proved that there is no creator. Why? Because he was in outer space. He saw that there's nothing there. That's polished intelligence. Saw that there's nothing there. I guess he didn't conceive that maybe God was hiding on the other side of Earth when he was there. Okay, nothing there. Now, somehow or the other, a short while after that, the first team of Americans made it up to space. And when they were coming back, they were broadcasting, as they were back on their approach to Earth, they were awe-stricken. And what they said was, they read the psukim from Tehillim. Of when I see your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you established, what is man? This is what these people were saying when they were coming back. So this guy went up to space and he checked and he saw that there's no creator. These people came back with, I don't know if it was newfound or strengthened emunah. The answer is that the Russian went up knowing what he wanted to look for. He wanted to see that there was no creator. He peeked out of the window. There was no creator. So yes, things can be clear. But if you don't want to see it, you won't see it. You'll smear yogurt on your glasses, and you'll continue to see yogurt. So now, so yes, the Torah makes it, back to your question, the Torah makes a point of providing a lot of details in order to provide you with means of checking it up. Can you catch the Torah on any of these things? The New Testament is much more sparse on details. It's very vague in general. Yashka appeared at a mountaintop, and he took on a form that looked clearly divine, and all those presents fell on their faces and bowed. That's all. Who was there? How many people were there? What that form looked like? Let's not get into too many details. Keep it simple. What's that? That's it. No midrash. The Torah makes a point. That's part of the reason why the Torah is so proliferous. The details in the Torah are so proliferous with all these different ways. It's because at this point what the Guzari is doing, the Torah wanted to provide the Guzari with the means of doing what he's doing. Look, there are so many details there. Some of them should have been controvertible. So now he continues. The truth is that they weren't many. That's why, yes, we count the age of the world by counting, adding up the years of a few individuals. It's not so many. There's only a number of generations until you actually hit Moshe. Not so many. This was the story of mankind. Those individuals was the story of mankind for our fathers. Until Yaakov Avinu had his 12 Shvatim, kulam ru'uyim le'inyan Eloki. They were all worthy of that connection to Hashem. V'shava ha'elokus b'kahal rav, and then Hashem came to rest upon an entire nation. Up until then it was individual, it wasn't wholesale. When Yaakov had children who were all worthy, they all continued this godly existence. And all count continued with them. And we have the tradition of how many years preceded Moshe from him, from the Torah that he gave us. And from Moshe until our times, we're able to account for easily enough. That's already not too complicated. So Omar Kuzar. So the Kuzari is impressed. The king is impressed. Zeh prat marchiv marchik hamachshav arom min halev me'akozav ha'askom. The fact, this detail, that Moshe Rabbeinu comes and confidently sits down from the beginning of time until our time. This is exactly how mankind developed, how nations developed, who lived how long, who our ancestors were. They weren't many. Basically, Noach saw Adam. Avraham Avinu saw Noach. There's another link in between somewhere there. But Avraham Avinu saw Noach. Yaakov obviously knew Avraham Avinu. And then from there to Moshe is another one more link. So we're talking about a very small amount of generations that Moshe is coming and presenting to the Jewish people as the story of the world. So, the Guzari says the fact that the Torah presents these things basically precludes the possibility of it either being made up by the Jews in the desert or by it being made up by one individual, Moshe. Why? If we're to conceive that the Jewish people actually put the Torah together in the desert, made it all up, they put it together in the desert, all these details, the precise cheshbon of the years, it's impossible that 10 people would sit down to work these things out and manage to agree upon an exact formula without confusing it in one of their versions. Or that someone should let it out, that it wasn't really true. What's the other possibility? That Moshe made it up. If Moshe is going to come and profess to present to the Jewish people a made up account of all the history down to our time, which is not all that long. We're talking about 6-7 generations. And these are your ancestors. This is the story of your people. And not only that, I'm also going to tell you how every last nation in the world developed in that short period of time. It's impossible that that would be accepted without being refuted by the people he's trying to present it to. Kol shekein amonim rabim. Certainly if he's presenting it to a multitude. V'aminin karod. And especially since also he's presenting a very small number of years. En hakozav v'asheka yochel ikonis alav. There isn't really room for to make things up in such a small time frame. So the Kuzari is agreeing that the fact that Moshe is coming and very confidently saying, this is the story of the beginning of the world until now, and in it I'm going to explain to you how such great nations like Egypt and all the other nations, who they came from, where they developed from, who the great grandfather was, and how all of history developed in the recent past, is too much to be made up. So Omar HaChaver, so the Jewish Chaver continues this argument. He says, "Aval Avraham Avinu atzmai haya b'dor haflaga." Basically, all civilization developed from where? It developed at the time of the Dor HaFlaga. Before the Dor HaFlaga, civilization was completely different. It was all just one nation. So the civilization as they knew it at that time, or as we know it today, began with the Dor HaFlaga, right? That was when nations spread out. That was when different nations started developing. So now, he says, look how recent that history was when Moshe Rabbeinu came and actually presented it. Avraham Avinu was at that time, right? So what's he telling the Jewish people? This happened in the time of your great-grandfather, your great-great-grandfather. Venisha hu ukroivam. Now what actually happened at that time was, how did civilization develop? Beforehand, vayehi kol ha'aretz Safa Achas and Varim Achad. Beforehand, there was one nation, humanity, and one language. Right? Moshe is coming and telling the Jewish people this is how it was a few hundred years ago. Lashon Kodesh. Now, V'nishalhu ukroivav b'loshon Eiver Avi Aviv. At the time of the Dor HaFlaga, the original Lashon Kodesh, which was the only language in the world, it was lost for most people. It remained only with Avram's family, the family of Aver. V'lezenikra Ivri. That's why it's called Ivri. Ivri is from the word Averite. Aver, the family of Aver. Remained the language of Aver. Aver's family remained with Lashon HaKodesh. All the rest were dispersed and developed different nations and different languages. Ubamay Sha'acharov. Now, so Moshe is coming and he's going to tell these people the story of how all of civilization and language developed. How long after? The 400 years later. Can you make up stories, if you're coming in a civilized world and try to sell anybody that 400 years ago all this hadn't developed, all this hadn't begun? We have to realize at that time there was a lot of chachma in the world. It's not like they were, well, they were primitive if we're talking in terms of modern terms, but they weren't ignorant people. They were scholars, they were philosophers, they were people who were studying the ways of the world, and in a sense they knew a lot more about the secrets of the world, about the workings of the world, than we do. We might have an edge on them in technology, but a lot of the workings of the world and a lot of the deeper secrets of the world they understood better than us. I'm talking about the non-Jewish scholars of the time. Now he comes and presents himself to Paroi and the intelligentsia of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was the most developed nation at the time, the most advanced. And he's presenting himself to Paroi and the intelligentsia of Mitzrayim, and also to the intelligentsia of the Jewish people, the Zakenim, the elders. Choykrim alav. Now you have to realize that he was subjecting himself to rigorous analysis, because he wasn't coming with a popular message to Paroi, right? And the truth is that with the Jewish people, even though he was coming with an exciting message, he was asking them to put all their eggs in his basket. They're not going to be quick to do that either. So he is subjecting himself to rigorous analysis on the part of the intelligentsia, the Egyptian intelligentsia, and the Jewish intelligentsia. Moshe. Chaykrim alav. And they did see it necessary to investigate him heavily. Because the truth is that he did appear with an incredible message. He was coming and claiming that God spoke to him. This was a concept that at the time was unknown, and Paroi and his scholars could not accept that. And therefore, that already put him in a non-credible light. And the truth is that even the Jews doubted him to an extent. They weren't quick to accept what he had to say. They didn't grow completely comfortable with what he had to say until they actually witnessed Hashem speaking to him and them at Har Sinai. Even though there's no question that after the 10 Makkos, they were well convinced that Moshe Rabbeinu is a somebody, but it's like Hashem himself said. We see that there, the whole time, at the end of the day, it was something that was hard to really accept. That this person has an ongoing relationship with Hashem, as we've seen earlier. Philosophically, we're so used to the ideas, so we know what's the big deal. But philosophically, it's very, very hard to accept that Hashem converses with a human being. And therefore, not only the Egyptians, but even the Jews, even though they were certainly being convinced, one makkah after the next, it was bothering them. It was still an intrigue. When was it fully established? When they themselves experienced it at Har Sinai. And that's why we find... Oh, that's right. So the truth is, you're asking, already at that point they believed. Oh, the truth is, it says before that, Vayishma Aharon Vayamen. The people believed. It says at a few different points that they believed, each time to a higher level. Now, yes, it says Vayaminu b'Hashem u'b'Moshe Avdoi, but then right before Har Sinai, what does Hashem tell Moshe? The nation will hear me speak to you, v'gam b'cho ya'aminu le'olam, and then they will believe you forever. So in other words, yes, the belief was growing. It was growing in increments. There's no question that Kriyas Yamsuf made a major impact. At that point, they're already willing to follow him out into the desert. But there was something still gnawing at that point, which wasn't completely settled until they actually experienced it. There was a problem. A lot of times, you can be proven something, but it doesn't sit well with you. Right? But it goes against everything you understand. Right? That's what they were experiencing then. Yes, they saw. They saw the 10 markets. Each market was a big lesson in belief. But it was still hard to really accept. Didn't sit well with them, even though they already believed it. They saw it. When they actually experienced it at Har Sinai, that clinched. Now, we have to realize that was how the Jewish people treated Moshe. The Jewish people were not quick to accept. As the Khazari is going to tell us soon, even though we generally see it presented in a negative way, Am Kshe Oiref, it's actually a praise for them. The Jewish people are not a gullible people. The Jewish people are a skeptical bunch. And that's why Judaism is really the only culture that remained intact for such a long period of time. Because of that same stubbornness that was working against them in the Midbar. Hashem needed a stubborn people. And therefore, the Jewish people were rightfully skeptical about Moshe. They gave him a very hard time. Not because they were a dumb bunch, but because they were wise. A wise man is not quick to just believe. Now, so this, at this point, we're still at the stage where Moshe Rabbeinu is coming and presenting his message to the Egyptians and to the Jewish people. Let's remember, he's facing two separate fronts, two skeptical fronts, each for different reasons. The Egyptians are skeptical because they don't want to accept his message. They're certainly looking for holes, for chinks in his armor, right? The Jewish people, they would like it to be true, but before they're going to put their eggs into his basket, and in general, because they were an intelligent bunch, before they're really going to accept it, they want to analyze it well. Because, yes, they were concerned, okay, fine, somebody came and did some wonders. Wonders is not such a big deal. There are people who know how to manipulate the workings, the heavenly workings. Mitzrayim were very good at that. They knew how to manipulate the stars, and they knew how to manipulate the constellations. Chatumim. Sorcery in those days was the cutting edge of technology. And the Egyptians had the greatest battery of sorcerers. So if somebody comes and says, look, I'm going to show you something really amazing. That's not impressive. Mitzrayim was full of that. So these people, he was going to be subject to intense analysis by the star sorcerers of the time. And also by the Jewish people who were the star intellects of the time and were well aware of the concept of sorcery. So they were really giving him a very rigorous run for his money. Sorcery would not withstand true analysis. Because at the end of the day, sorcery is superficial. Sorcery can make certain temporary effects. Sorcery, by the way, is not like on the same footing as Nisim. Sorcery can't really make inherent changes in the way the world runs. It can't have long-lasting effects. Sorcery can do quick things for the moment. Even real sorcery. But it's not something that can really withstand rigorous analysis. And you can see through it. You can test it for sorcery. Whereas, when it's godly powers, which Moshe Rabbeinu was coming with, it was of a completely different quality and caliber than the sorcery going on in Mitzrayim. So yeah, when he first came and showed up and he said, Abaisa, look what I can do, I can make water into blood. What was the response? Shkoyach, big deal. Any beginning sorcerer can do that. That's not a big deal. But as things progressed, he's showing one thing after the other. See, in the beginning, the sorcerers are saying, okay, we can match it. Then, they started having a hard time keeping up with it. Until it reached the point where they just gave up, and Moshe is way ahead of them. These are things that are simply beyond sorcery. When it's godly powers, yes, in the beginning you can question it, but it'll prove itself. Going and solidifying itself more and more. So therefore, we understand that yes, when Moshe was coming and presenting his message, he was undergoing rigorous analysis. And they were checking intensely to find any holes, any chinks in his armor. So now we go back to what we started with. So what's Moshe coming and telling them? Let's understand how preposterous Moshe's message would be if it's false. Part of what he's conveying in the Torah is that he's telling to the Jewish people is that all of civilization developed 500 years ago. All the nations of the world, the famous nations of the world, Egypt and Canaan and Midian and all this, I'm going to tell you exactly how they developed. Really, it was all one nation. 500 years ago, there was this big tower. That's when it split up, and that's when they developed Egypt, this, that, This is what he's trying to sell. Echyal b'dash yeduma etzlam. How could it be that these people would accept if it wasn't true? Kial shoynis asher hayu lifneim kachamesh me'eshana. That a mere 500 years earlier, you have to remember that in historic perspective, 500 years ago is nothing. We are very, very familiar with the goings-on of the world 500 years ago. It's not just because of technology. It's always like that in history. 500 years ago is not a long time, historically. So it's inconceivable that he should be able to tell them that 500 years ago, Hayoloshen Ever Levada, there was only one language. The language of Ever, Ivri. What's today known as Lashon HaKodesh is the only language in existence, and there are no other languages. Benifliga beBavel bimei Peleg, and all this split apart in Babel in the days of Peleg 500 years ago. V'yachas uma kach v'kachel Yefes, and this well-known nation developed from Yefes at that time. V'uma kach v'kachel Shem, and that nation developed from Shem. V'uma kach v'kachel Cham, and that nation developed from Cham. V'artzeisom kach. Yeah, that great Egyptian nation. They've only been here for 500 years. They originated back in that Tower of Babel. Impossible to sell something like this. There's the Khuzari talking 1200 years ago. He says, is it conceivable that someone today should be able to come along and introduce a falsehood to come and tell us stories about the origins of well-known nations? He's going to tell you that a well-known nation first started, their whole language developed 500 years ago, within the last 500 years. Could someone come and do that? It's impossible. Okay, someone can tell you that the United States developed within the last 500 years, but Palestinians. Oh, okay, there you go. Oh yeah, well, we have Ahmadinejad who says that no Holocaust happened. But someone come and says Spain started 500 years ago. It's not just because this was unthinkable, not just in our times when we have, they always had documentation of these things. So Amar Kuzari, the Kuzari says, Zeh lo yitoch. It's inconceivable, such a possibility. Ech yitoch en zeh. How could that possibly be? We have so much material remaining from 500 years ago, and this is at their time when they weren't into archaeology. We have so much material remaining from 500 years ago. We have written works from people who existed 500 years ago. It's impossible to start making up stories about the origins of nations within the last 500 years. It's impossible to come and start making up stories about scripts, languages, nations developing within the last 500 years. 500 years is too short a time period historically. And what's Moshe doing? He's not coming and making up the story of one nation. He's coming and explaining the origin of all of civilization, all the major nations at the time. So Amar HaChover. So the Chover says that's right. Moshe comes and presents these fantastic facts, detailed accounts of exactly who was the father of which nation and who he came from and how many years ago, and it all started in Babel. And how could it be that nobody would dispute what he said? We have a nation of 3 million people who weren't born in a vacuum. His own nation would argue against him. Kol Shekin Sulasam, certainly others. So Amar Kuzari, so the king of Kuzari is accepting this. He says, Eile Dvarim Mikubolim Chazokim Umiyusolim. Yes, these are very solid arguments. But the Chavar is not finished with these arguments yet. He wants to take it further. To really establish that yes, the history presented to us by the Torah can actually be inferred from reality. So now the Chavar hits from a new angle. He's kind of developing a new subject, but it's really all the same subject. Let's see. Ha'atareish al shenis kedumois ein lahem tchila. The Chavar asks the king of Kuzar now a new question. I want to ask your opinion. What's your opinion? Are languages natural, or is it something man-made? What do you say? So Amar Kuzari says, avalim chadoshes muskam aleim. Of course, languages are contrived. Moira alze chibura min hashemois va'p'olim v'hamilos. The way words are articulated shows that they are contrived, they're not natural. Meaning, is human communication, we know that there are all kinds of forms of life that have natural forms of communication. Right? Chimpanzees communicate in all kinds of ways. Dolphins. All kinds of animals communicate verbally. Right? Now there it's natural, it's instinctive. It's not something that the council, the central council of chimpanzees got together and developed. But human speech is not like that. Human speech is a contrivance. The proof of that is that these are not automatic sounds. Natural communication is automatic sounds. Bark in a certain way, it means one thing. Barking in another way is another thing. It's not words that you have to put together. Right? And that's why it comes naturally to animals. It's not something you have to learn. It's not something you would ever have a hard time pronouncing. It would come natural if it was just chirping. The fact that it's not like that, the fact that, no, you have to put together the different syllables and you have to formulate the sound of the word, even though we do it automatically, shows that this is something that was put together. Where is he going with this? Well, we'll see. Now, Omar HaChover. So now the Chover says, Hara'isa boy deloshin milibay oishamat olav. Now, have you actually seen someone originate a language? You're telling me that, yes, languages are man-made. Did you ever see the process? The truth is, if you think about it, it's very hard to imagine. It's like almost incomprehensible. How would a language develop? So, yes, and have you ever seen the process of a person inventing a language? Omer HaChover, Esa Arna HaKuzris, so the king says, Lo yiro isi velo yishamati. I know. Never in my experience did I ever see a language invented. But obviously this is something that was invented at some point in time. Language is obviously something innovated by man. And before each nation made up their nation, there wasn't the language. Alashim in built Elashim, meaning each nation developed their own language. These, the Slavs, developed Slavic language, and it was only theirs because the Indians lived in a different part of the world. They developed their language, and it was only theirs because these others lived in a different part of the world. That obviously happened at some point. There was no language that started naturally because language is not a nature. If language was natural, there wouldn't be different languages. So Amar HaChover. So the Chover says, okay, note something very interesting. We're going to finish here. I'm just going to present, just to notice we shouldn't kind of leave things hanging. It's the middle of an argument. What he's leading up to is, it's very interesting to note that there are certain concepts that are absolutely universal. One might say that the fact that there are different languages is because humanity started from all kinds of different places. There wasn't an original father. And, yeah, this form of humanity developed here and this form there, and they have different languages. But he's going to show now that, for example, why is it that the amount of days in a week is universal? Nobody has a different week. The week, everywhere, is 7 days. That implies that there's some common origin. Why isn't there also the same common origin of language? Why are there different languages? If we do see indications that there are certain universal origins to concepts that are accepted by all of mankind. You have areas of mankind, the Chinese can't communicate at all with the Anglos, and yet the week is universal. Or number 10 as a unit. Using 10 as a unit. Universal. What he's leading up to, we'll see. What he's leading up to is to show, you see that no, there are concepts that are universal concepts which indicate that it all did start in one place. And it's exactly languages that got split. How's that? Dor HaPlugah. Another indication of the Dor HaPlugah. We'll see.